All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily NFL podcast for Friday, October 28th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is...
James Davis.
He was psyching himself up with the mute button.
Yeah, you got this, James.
We're from Daily Fantasy. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to help you get started or continue winning on DraftKings or FanDuel, DFS, NFL. We also have NBA available under our premium subscription, which is free for 3 days and $29.95 a month after that. It includes optimal lineups powered by Lineup Lab for both FanDuel and DraftKings. It's basically just one touch, calculate optimal lineups for NFL and NBA, which just started the season really, really nicely. So head on over to the site and grab your free 3 day trial of that. I'm sure you will be pleased. And let's talk some NFL. So last night, real quick, just to recap last night, I mean, the NFL just can't get out of its own way with putting just terrible games on Thursday nights.
No,
I mean, they do it on purpose, clearly, but because they just want someone to watch. They're like, this is the only way someone will watch this game, right?
Just so you think so? Just to antagonize, like, the NFL network and...
Well, not to antagonize it, but, like, to... just because, like, that's the only way to get ratings on such a terrible game is to just put that game standing by itself, you know? Like, they can't have... So, anyway, they just... That's why you'll never just see really... You're never going to really see that good of teams show up there. But Bortles is terrible until he just garbage times his way, which is basically his MO. Garbage times his way to actually like kind of crazy value at the end. He had like 80 yards and no touchdowns at halftime, and then finished with 303, and that was all in garbage. But that's just basically, I mean, that's
what he did all last year too.
This is not his whole career. He's just not very good. Murray looks pretty good, though. Derrick Henry sniped some of his usage because the game had gotten a little bit out of hand, and after that,
yeah, Murray also banged up in this game. He left for a while. There was some, you know, concern about his return, and ultimately did come back. But yeah, it could have been a monster game and was merely good instead.
Yeah, which is a shame. He was a good play, and that was one of the reasons you could play Thursday night was he was a really, really strong play. He was just outside the optimal lineups for us. I think he was probably like in the fourth or fifth lineup, just because there is some other running back value this week, which we're going to get to. But overall, there's not a ton of takeaways. So we're going to break down every single game on the NFL slate. Starting with, speaking of bad games thrown into odd times, there's a London game this week between the Bengals and the Redskins. Jordan Reed's going to be back playing. He sat out with a concussion the last 2 weeks, but he looks like he traveled and is going to play in London. After him, and I'm not even sure he's really a consideration, is there any reason to get up early on Sunday and get lineups in for, other than just to play guys in the later slates? Is there any reason to get up and put anyone from this game in?
I mean, not really. The one big fantasy performer from either of these teams, frankly, has been AJ Green, but obviously quite a tough matchup with Josh Norman there. After that, like, you're not going to trust Reed, I don't think, even though he is coming back. Like, the injury concerns, you know, Vernon Davis has been decent. You could see him at least, like, splitting snaps or doing something like that. You can get up early and root for one of the team's defenses if you want. I don't know how fun that will be, but chances are good with all the jet lag. I mean, we've seen some wacky London games. It wouldn't shock me if Cincinnati, you know, just gobbled up the Washington offense. So, I don't know. Are you excited yet?
No. Yeah, I mean, this is it's just not – there's no reason to really get – anything going here. Jeremy Hill had a big game last week, but that was just about as lucky as you can get. 9 carries for 168 yards.
Yeah, totally ridiculous.
Right.
Like, this guy, Bakir Cole, who went to my high school, he used to put up totals like that. But in the NFL, a little more difficult when everyone can, like, you know, run fast and tackle.
Yeah, so
one guy to watch out for big tournaments, I would say, is Chris Thompson. You know, was decent last week. He did have 7 receptions for 40 yards out of the backfield. And paired that with 12 really good carries as well. So, you know, who knows? The Redskins really haven't run the ball very effectively all season. But with Matt Jones, I think he's questionable right now. He didn't practice on Wednesday. So if Thompson slides into the starting role, he could be an excellent punt play. But that's really it here.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I will not be waking up other than to just start checking on things for the 1 o'clock slate, which kicks off. We had a couple scheduling changes. The NFL flexed Carolina and Arizona to 1 o'clock, and they moved the Green Bay Atlanta game to 4:30. Just to have it stand alone, probably by itself for the later slate. But let's start off with the Saints and the Seahawks. So the Seahawks come in here; they are slight favorites, though that dropped a little bit from open. The over ticked up just a bit. You know, going into the season, when you looked at Russell Wilson facing the Saints, it felt like probably would have been, you're like, oh, I'm all over this play, right? I mean, this guy is super accurate, and the Saints defense is bad. But man, Wilson, I don't know. He's been bad. And I can't even, this would have been almost like an auto lock cash gameplay for me at the start of the season, and it's just not now. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, something is clearly wrong with Russell Wilson. I mean, you know, the accuracy has dipped just a little bit. It's not terrible or anything. The touchdowns to interceptions are still fairly solid. But the big thing that I'm looking at here is the rushing yards, right? So historically, you could count on Russell for, you know, in the 30s, as many as 50 rushing yards per game in 2014. And this year, he's down all the way to 5 yards per game. You know, this to me kind of signals towards his health problems that he's kind of been struggling with on and off this season. And if it's affecting his running game, it stands to reason it's going to affect him in the pass as well. But it's funny. I mean, he's averaging the most passing yards per game of his career, but losing the safety of those 3 to 5 points on the ground really does kill him. I mean, and it also takes away usually the possibility of him getting rushing touchdowns too. So yep. Now you're just basically looking at, you know, run first quarterback who doesn't run, and an offense that wants to go slow and grind games out, as we saw against Arizona. So yeah, I'm super, super less than thrilled at Wilson right now.
Yeah, it's hard. And I it'll be interesting to see what his ownership is. You need to put a lot of faith in that. Maybe those first couple games, these first like 5 or 6 games have been hiccups, but I'm not really willing to do that. I think I can see people talking themselves into playing him, and you know, it could end up being correct. The Saints' defense is, like, really can't state that they're just a very, very bad defense, obviously. But, you know, they rank 29th in the league in DVOA and are just equally bad against both the pass and the rush. So it's not like they, it's not like they're stopping one and allowing.
They're not picking and choosing here.
Well, it's like, it was one of it's like one of those things where it's like, well, the one, you know, the secondary can't be mad at the front line. You know, they're just all bad. You know? So I can see people playing him. What, you know, Christian Michael is another guy who, you know, he's going up again against the aforementioned bad Saints defense. He saw his carries dip just some last week. CJ Procise comes in and plays some of the third down. Do you see Michael as a safer cash game guy, as like a bell cow, or is it just going to possibly be some just better running back value elsewhere? Because he's another guy I can see people playing.
I mean, yeah, he's reasonable. You definitely don't love the decrease in opportunity last week. I mean, he was already kind of fringy when it comes to opportunity on his price point at 7,800. Just because this season we have a handful of guys who just get the ball all the time, and he's just clearly not in that category. With 21 touches against Atlanta and then just 19 in an overtime game with Arizona. So, you know, I'm certainly not in love with Christian Michael here at that price point. Again, it's rough because it is such a good matchup, and, you know, 3 weeks ago, we would be jamming Christian Michael everywhere, but I think Procise introduces enough uncertainty that, and there's just some really disgusting value elsewhere that I just don't think we need to force the issue.
What about on the Saints side of the ball? They are playing at home. The Seattle defense is good. They're slight underdogs. This is the Seattle defense just kind of wiped the slate off of most of their offensive weapons, just considering the matchup is not very good.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, the one guy we talked about yesterday is Michael Thomas. I'm continuing to look at him here. Last game, he went out there and had 61 snaps, which you love to see, and a 21% target share on those snaps. And that was a tough matchup with Kansas City. And I think we have a similar game script developing here where it stands to reason that, you know, Sherman and the better cornerbacks in Seattle there are going to be focusing on Snead and Cooks, and that will let Thomas slip through on the underneath route. So I suspect that Thomas will be, you know, very reasonable once again. I mean, it's hard to call him a huge upside guy just because he doesn't run the big downfield routes, but he doesn't really need to do that to provide value. You know, last week, 10 receptions, 130 yards, and yeah, that was more than enough to get you home. So I do like Thomas this week. I'm not sure he'll wind up being, you know, as high upside as some other guys maybe, but yeah, for cash games, I like him a lot.
All right, the next game is the Patriots and the Bills. Patriots come in here, actually not as big a favorite as I thought they would be, -5, projected for around 26 points against Buffalo. Last week, they won, but they didn't win the same as much by kind of as much as I thought they would by the Steelers. They won by 9. The game did stay closer pretty much throughout. New England scored a touchdown in the fourth to sort of pull away. Brady didn't only threw 26 times, they ran the ball 24 times with Blunt. Does that decrease in just overall passing have you at all concerned about Brady, or were they just kind of playing a matchup here against the Steelers and just kind of grounding and pounding and trying to get out of Pittsburgh alive?
I mean, it does point to a trend we've noticed earlier this season, which is the Patriots' willingness to actually run the ball now, as opposed to just use the short passing game as the de facto running game. So that's got to concern you just a little bit, because it used to be that, you know, even in games that got away from them, that Brady would be a pretty safe play. And that being said, you know, he's still hyper efficient against Pittsburgh, spread the ball around decently, you know, 73% completion percentage, now over 70% in every game this season. Still did get the 2 passing touchdowns, hooking up with Gronk there. Which was also nice to see if you are into Gronkowski, which a lot of daily fantasy people are. What are you like? Why are you giggling?
It just sounded so. It sounded like a robot.
Some people are into Gronkowski, dude. They love Gronk.
I love. No, just sounded funny. Why are you giggling? You sounded funny. Like, move on. Move on.
I'm not ready to move on yet. I just want to know what's so funny.
We have Gronk listed as the highest overall tight end projected points, and Brady's the second highest quarterback. The problem with them is they're just expensive, right? And if you're just at all worried that the volume is not going to be there, like, you know, for Brady at 80, you know, in the 8,000s range, and frankly for Gronk too, Brady needs to throw like 35 to 40 times minimum. And if you're all concerned that's not going to happen against, you know, maybe a little slower Bills team in Buffalo, it just makes it a little tricky to really, you know, feel safe with him for cash games. Then that would be the only thing I would kind of caution with him and Gronk.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills have allowed a greater than league average number of yards per game this season and allowed a greater than league average number of points per game. So I don't think that, you know, I'm not spooked by the Bills or the game script really necessarily, but that's not to say that you should just jam Brady and Gronk everywhere, because I do believe that there's probably better value. But yeah, I don't mind. I think he'll be a highly owned player, and I don't think it will be bad.
What about the Bills side? It looks like they're still going to kind of take a conservative-ish approach with McCoy. You know, Tyrod has just been kind of a guy. He'll run a little bit. They're going to be it stands to reason they're playing from behind here. Marquise Goodwin had a decent game last game, filling in for Robert, or, you know, kind of taking over some of Robert Woods' targets. Do you like anything on the Bills?
I think I like Tyrod Taylor for upside only. I'm not going to touch the running back situation just because it's too uncertain, and, you know, wide receivers just aren't doing it for me right now. But yeah, Taylor goes out there last week and puts up 24 points on the back of a rushing touchdown and 35 rushing yards. And that's, you know, we've talked about this several times, where if you can just sneak in 10 points out of your rushing game as a quarterback, you're essentially a running back and a quarterback at that point. And even if you're a kind of bad version of both, that's, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, right? So, yeah, I think Taylor can get there. I mean, listen, we haven't even seen really a breakout week from Taylor. Like, last week was 221 yards and just one passing touchdown to go with 35 yards and a touch. That doesn't sound like a huge game, but it just is for the quarterback position. So, especially on a $7,600 salary. So, yeah, I do think Taylor could break out. I don't think that it will necessarily happen. He's not necessarily in my big tournament rotation, but a guy worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I mean, like last week, Landry Jones he threw for 281 yards. Now, granted, they were playing catch up most of the game. 29 for 47. Bell was able to run a little bit. Antonio Brown had some, you know, usage. The Patriots defense is not totally great shakes, especially against the pass this year. Now, again, teams are forced to pass a little bit more against them, but yeah, they're just like not a lock it down defense. So I could see a tournament flyer on a guy like Taylor, especially if you think that he has the ball a lot more because he's playing from behind and he's trying to do the things that he needs to do to try to catch the team up. But otherwise, I don't think I'm going totally nuts about it. You can maybe even consider the Patriots defense.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That they're showing up as a top points per dollar defense for like a safety perspective in our system. Does that sound right to you?
I mean, it could be. You know, the interception expectation is probably a little lower because the Bills don't throw as much, and so I could see they're just cheap. That's really the thing there. They're on FanDuel. They're the minimum. No, not the minimum, but they're $4,500. And yeah, I mean, just from a cheapness aspect, I mean, there are a couple other teams I probably like a little bit better from a defense. But yeah, for value, I could see people. I could see people playing them, honestly. And it'd probably be correct. It would probably be correct. Let's go into the next game, where it's the Jets and the Browns. Ugh. And the, you know, Geno Smith. He tears his ACL after finally getting gifted the starting position back in New York, tears his ACL in the first quarter. Ryan Fitzpatrick is back. The Browns are the Browns. I'm not even positive who they're starting at quarterback. It could be McCown this week. He's been practicing. It could be Hogan. I mean, that team is a total mess. But on the Jets side of the ball, what do you think Fitzpatrick moving back into the lineup, does that like boost your confidence in that wide receiver core a little bit? I mean, he was not good, but he at least throws the ball.
Yeah, I think it makes Brandon Marshall a much more intriguing option. You know, Marshall wasn't great last week, even with Fitzpatrick getting back into the mix, but that probably is a big result of Smith taking all the first team reps during practice. So yeah, I could see Marshall being a reasonable play. Do you know if Hayden's playing this week for the Browns? I hadn't seen a note on that.
Yeah, he's coming back. So, I mean, that probably cuts into Marshall a little bit if he's going to cover him, which stands to reason he will. I still like the volume on Marshall. He's one of those mid upper middle tier wide receivers that we'll see at times, even in, you know, minus matchups for him, can see double digit targets. Like, he was up around that target share against Sherman earlier in the year. So they will jam the ball to him on offense just because they just don't have a ton of other options. I like him from a volume perspective in that case.
Yeah, decent. I mean, all that said, Marshall still only has two good games on this price all season long, so don't hate it, but I don't know why you would, you know, given your precious three wide receiver slots on FanDuel, for instance. I'm not sure Marshall gets to fill one of them.
Yeah, I see that. And the other guy that's kind of interesting here, especially if they're, you know, if they're playing from ahead against a bad Browns team, is Forte carried the ball 30 times last week and had a bunch of targets also in the passing game. Does that – now, that's way, way higher than anything else he had done this season. Actually, well, maybe early in, like, the first game they kind of
– he had a few big games earlier this season where he had huge volume. I don't – it's just so hard to project, right, because – yeah, so against Buffalo, he had this exact line. He also had 30 carries for exactly 100 yards. So I'm not sure what you're supposed to do about that other than try to figure out if you're the one who's going to guess that this will be a big volume game or not. I don't think I'm willing to play with fire on that, but I do think it could be reasonable for a big tournament.
Yeah, for tournaments for sure, especially because he creates in just the both facets of the game. So that's an interesting one to keep an eye on. That volume, like we said, is that's elite volume, but you just simply can't trust it. So tournament.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bilal Powell is dealing with the turf toe issue, so that does, you know, certainly increase Forte's stock. Powell was really the guy that was cutting into, especially Forte's catches out of the backfield. So yeah, if Powell's going to be out, for instance, then I think Forte becomes a much stronger consideration.
That's a good point. We would boost his overall expectation if it looked like he was going to be the sole guy coming out of the backfield. Yeah. But Powell has been some of that third down back stuff and just has spelled him on series as well. All right, next game we have is an interesting one. I think it's the highest one. Well, that's not the highest, but it's up there. The Raiders and the Bucks. Decent fantasy implications here. Latavius Murray comes back to get a bulk of the carries for the Raiders last week. And then on the Tampa Bay side of the ball, we're staring at a couple guys here that I think that are still pretty interesting from a value perspective. What are your thoughts on this game?
There are a lot of extremely relevant fantasy plays in this game. I mean, it's most of them, I think, are on the Tampa Bay side of the ball, but particularly Jacquizz Rodgers and Mike Evans. We talked about both of them for the podcast yesterday, I believe. But just to give a refresher, Evans is the targets per game leader on the NFL season so far with 75 targets in just six games. He's on pace for 200 targets total by season's end. And he also has the world's best matchup today with Oakland. So given all those factors together, he looks like just a phenomenal play. I suspect he'll be heavily owned in cash games too, as a result of him being heavily owned last week and performing on that total. So definitely got to keep an eye on. Jacquizz Rodgers is another guy. I mean, he's priced in what we like to call that sort of no man's land in the mid 6,000s on FanDuel, but now back-to-back weeks with 27 touches or more, so 35 and then 27 against San Francisco, continues to be a very good play. Considering Doug Martin isn't going to be back this week. So, yeah, both of those guys are spot on. And then I think for big tournaments, you can also consider Jameis Winston, who's kind of a boom or bust candidate, but can certainly boom in the right matchup. And this seems to be that.
Yeah, I think I would actually, I mean, right now for our optimal lineups, I believe Jameis is coming in on DraftKings just in the lineups. And
we should start a weekly segment where I am not very enthusiastic about a guy who's in our optimal lineups. What do you say?
Oh, hey, buddy, guess what? He's not there anymore, but he's in the fourth one. So close enough. Now, I think this, the price allows you to just get every other basically just high volume, decent play this week. Sure. And so that's the reason I wouldn't do it on FanDuel at all. But on DraftKings, I think he's actually just a reasonable cash game play for sure. And, you know, we talked about Rodgers, how Barber cut into a little bit of his touches from last time, so you can't really expect him to be the 30 touch a guy. What about Oakland? They, you know, the wide receivers have been sort of, you know, pick your poison in terms of who's going to get the volume up between Crabtree and Cooper.
Yep.
But it does seem like it kind of just goes either or one of those two guys on every given week. Do you see them, either of them, as safe in this matchup, or are they more just like kind of upside GPP guys?
Yeah, with those guys, you're just trying to guess the right one. I mean, we kind of thought that Cooper was establishing himself in that role as the guy who's just going to get the higher volume, especially because he was cutting into Crabtree's short yardage targets. But of course, that flip-flopped and went back the other way. And it's good football, right? I mean, you don't want the other team to be able to guess your game plan. And when you do have two good weapons the way Oakland does, you can expect them to move it back and forth quite a bit, probably. Another player to keep an eye on from Oakland is Latavius Murray. He came back last week and assumed an RB1 workload, having 18 carries and 2 receptions out of the backfield. So he also got both of their goal line carries. He's just 6,200 on FanDuel, and I think that's an excellent price for a guy who could be up around the 20 carry range or the 20 touch range. And I don't know that you want to play him in cash games, just because having missed two games and having limited work in some others, certainly a red flag there. But given his general effectiveness and especially their desire to use him by the goal line, he could be in high upside play as well. And one that you should be able to get plenty of separation on if that's the direction you want to go for big tournaments. But yeah, just a guy to keep an eye on, particularly if he comes back and has another 20 touches this game, he should be back on the radars for week 9 as well.
Yeah. He was a guy the Raiders didn't seem like they really loved him to start the season. And then he got hurt and they sort of were gifted a chance to have one of these other guys like Rashard or Washington stand out among the group. And that just didn't happen. And so now they're just back to the guy. They're like, oh, maybe this was the best guy we had.
The old ex-girlfriend who you're like, yeah, she's crazy, man. I'm never going to. And everyone's like, yeah, totally, dude. We totally agree with that 100%. And then like 3 weeks later, he's like, yeah, I've been hanging out with Latavius again. You're like, oh, I like that. Yeah, Latavius is cool.
Oh, she's great, man. That's great. That's awesome.
He's a good guy.
I always thought you guys were meant to be together. So that game has, you can see, you can definitely see a scenario where winning GPP lineups have one or maybe even two guys from this game, because they just have this. This does have some of the hallmarks of a game that could be really high scoring. It's projected to be close with a lot of points. So and you're getting in some value here. So I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe one or even two pretty huge breakout games. Also, I mean, the Tampa Bay wide receiver core after Evans are a couple guys. Shepard had a decent game last game. Brate, you know, saw some targets. So I could see especially if they're going to need to move away from Evans just because of coverage. There are a couple other weapons there coming on the cheap that you can probably consider. The next game we have after that one it's interesting, the Chiefs and the Colts. The Chiefs, again, are one of the higher implied totals of the game, or excuse me, of the week. Ware was a chalky play last week. It was funny because we nailed his volume and he was still great. And we had him in like DraftKings lineups. But, you know, he's one of these guys that he doesn't get the ball a ton, but he just seems like he breaks something off every single game. Like a 55-yard passing, you know, catch and run for a touchdown, something like that. But last week, only 17 carries, only 2 targets. Is he a guy that you can even trust at this point? That, you know, they'll use him, but he's just not, doesn't seem like he's not an every down volume back.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting about the Chiefs and their rushing situation, because people used to say similar things about Jamaal Charles, which was that, you know, you couldn't trust the workload, but he could break a long run or whatever. And and we're kind of seeing similar stuff with Ware here, where it could just be something systematic about the Chiefs rushing attack, that it doesn't totally matter who's back there as long as it's someone who's kind of fast. And Ware and Charles both fit that category quite well. Again, like with Charles lurking, I don't know that you really want to spend $7,400 on a guy like Ware, but, you know, I'm prepared to say that on a Friday and regret it on the Sunday once again. So I don't, if we're just being honest, I don't totally know what to make of the Spencer Ware situation. I would be surprised, you know, like there aren't a lot of players who can go out there and touch the ball just 19 times and continue to put up, you know, whatever it was, 140 yards, 130 yards.
Jeremy Hill just raised his hand.
Yeah, that's unusual, right? Like there haven't historically been many running games that can produce 6 yards per touch or 5.5 yards per touch. But, you know, if the Chiefs are going to be one, then value-based systems like ours are going to continue to be behind on them. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, you know, Charkandrick West is there too. He got some carries last game. Charles, they only gave him the ball one time. It's not clear that they're comfortable here. Yeah. You know, he's limited practice again this week, but that doesn't really mean anything in the NFL these days. So there's too much uncertainty to really trust it, I think. But it's just, yeah, he's just a guy that just gets a lot of yards and gets a decent amount of production for very few touches, it seems. And it's just, I don't know. The Colts side, Luck is still Luck. They have Hilton. What do you think about this, their passing game? Maybe probably more their passing game simply because it stands to reason they're going to be playing from behind.
Yeah, I can't say I love Luck this week. I mean, Kansas City is a top 10 passing defense this year, and while their defense hasn't been quite as stout as last year, a lot of that's been due to a regression in their running defense. So, you know, Luck and Hilton are always a good high upside pairing if you want to target them for big tournaments. But for cash games, I just don't know why you bother. You know, you just got plenty of other options in those price ranges, and I I personally don't think that's the best spot where you can invest your money.
Yeah, Hilton's is just your classic boomer bust guy. This is for his career. He just doesn't convert a ton of his targets to receptions, but when he does, they're just awesome. So he goes, sure. 7 for 133 and a touchdown last week, and the week before he just goes 3 for 49, right?
And then and he's the NFL leader in targets too. Like,
right.
You know what you're getting with Hilton. Like, aside from the game against Houston, he's gone double digit targets in every single game. So he is a huge volume guy, and that price that he's at, like, there will be weeks where he's going to be up there in terms of overall points per dollar. If you want to figure out which week that's going to be, then good for you, I guess. I definitely don't mind him. Like, and I think probably if you played 1,000 NFL games and you could get T.Y. Hilton at 7,800 against, a slightly above average to slightly below average passing defense, you could probably do pretty well for yourself. But with 17 precious weeks of the NFL season, I'm just not sure the average listener out there wants to roll the dice on that.
Yeah, he's interesting too, because on FanDuel, he is the same price. And he's $100 cheaper than a guy like Evans. And if you thought Evans was going to be the chalkier play, then Hilton makes a great pivot just to go, sort of A to B. And in terms of, our projection system has them almost, really, really, really close altogether. And mostly because it's translating Hilton's volume and targets out and spreading it out evenly, but that's just not how he operates, right? So, like, he's just not like Evans in that way. Evans doesn't convert a ton either, but it's been, I think, slightly better this season. But he's just boom or bust. I don't really have another way
I see them as the same guy, basically, but Evans just has a much better matchup. Like, they essentially do the same thing, and they're essentially the same price, except Evans is against the league's worst by far passing defense, and Hilton is not. So that, to me, is enough of a tiebreaker. I mean, you can make an argument for playing both, I suppose, but if you have to pick one guy in the 8,000 range on FanDuel who's a high-risk, high-reward guy, my guy's Evans.
Next game is Detroit heading into Houston. Houston's a slight favorite in this one. A lot of the week has been spent, it seems like, the internet just making fun of Brock Osweiler's contract. So I don't know if you've seen, like, there's been a bunch of just memes and other just commentary about how he's essentially just robbed the city of Houston. I think there's actually even like a GoFundMe campaign that's like trying to buy him out of his contract. Like, they're just trying to. So I gotta look up for the link. If I find the link for that, I'll post it in the show notes. But so Osweiler is just, this is all stands to all just kind of says he sucked this year, and yet they're still a favorite going in against Detroit. What do you see as just like what's the? Just give me your takeaway on the whole entire situation in Houston right now.
The whole entire situation in Houston is that it's a complete mess. I mean, we like Lamar Miller going into the season, and while the volume has often been there for him, the production hasn't been because other teams can sit on the run. And so, he winds up getting reasonable volume, at least in a lot of games, and then not really doing anything with it. And then recently, the Texans have now abandoned the run pretty much. Miller, in two of his last three games, has touched the ball 14 and 9 times. And then, of course, a big performance against Indianapolis. But, I don't know what you want to do here. I mean, they've somehow turned DeAndre Hopkins into an afterthought. Will Fuller was pretty electric early on in the season, and now he's out of the picture. So what the Texans are doing is, frankly, anybody's guess. I really struggle to even find high upside targets in this game unless you just want to be the guy who catches Brock Osweiler on the right week. And good luck if that's you, because I'm not going
to
be doing it.
The only thing you can point to, maybe just from an upside point of view, is Hopkins does have 27 targets over the last 2 weeks. And if they're just, some of that was, Fuller was banged up, and they really don't have any, they really just don't have any other receivers after him. So, that could be part of Osweiler's struggles too. I'm not totally positive, but if you're looking at a guy who, if he's able to convert some of those targets just into an upside game, they are at least throwing him the ball. And he had 9 the week before. So 36 targets over the last 3 weeks, averaging so 12 a week. That could turn itself into a big game. I wouldn't bet on it at all for cash games. Like you said, it's just a total mess. But at least the target share has gone up sort of to where we expected him to be to start the season. And so if we're trying to take any encouraging fantasy sign away, I would take that one away, but it's not.
Yeah. They call you old silver lining Doug. I like that.
They really do call me that.
So picture this, Doug. So say the Texans sign a new quarterback, a young man called James Davis. Okay.
Uh-huh.
He comes in and he's not really an NFL quarterback. It's me, actually. That's my name. So I don't want to give away the ending here. But so I'm in there, and I'm trying to throw the ball to DeAndre Hopkins, but my hands are kind of too small to hold the ball, and I'm just floating the ball out there. He could get all the targets in the world. In fact, that would be my best strategy. It just wouldn't make a difference. I don't think targets from Brock Osweiler are created equally to targets from other dudes Hopkins has had in the past. And, I think it's just – That's a phantom. Like, I don't think it's really going to turn into any major production.
On the Detroit side, the Golden Tate's seen double-digit targets in the last two games. Is he now in sort of climbing back into – it was a guy we really liked to start the season, and then the targets kind of dipped in favor of Marvin Jones, and they just were on the lower end. But now, you know, now 2 weeks of double-digit targets, does he start creeping into the safer cash game variety based on if he's just going to be that kind of double-digit guy?
Yeah, like you said, we loved Tate as the kind of over-the-middle possession guy, and – you know, he kind of was on and off in that early in the season. Some games he had a good target share, some games not so much. I think Detroit realized that, you know, the dream of Marvin Jones sliding right into Calvin Johnson in his prime shoes is not really going to work out. So, yeah, Tate, to your point, let's see, 20% and then 27% target share in the last 2 weeks against LA and Washington. That's just excellent, super, super elite. And on a $6,300 salary, that just really gives him a terrific floor as well. He is a guy that they'll use in the red zone too. So there's really not a lot to dislike about Golden Tate, frankly, unless you are worried about, you know, kind of a regression back to the old target share there.
Yeah, Houston's been very good on defense against the pass. They're seventh overall in DVOA this year, and they've kind of locked down wide receiver ones and twos, fourth and seventh respectively against those two. So that's the only case sort of – that's the thing that's bringing Tate down a little bit, or one of the things bringing Tate down a little bit in the system, overall pace of play too. But that would be the only thing that kind of – that they have sort of taken away that – they have taken away that guy this year. So
yeah, well, and so Tate, I don't know that he's a conventional wide receiver too, in that, you know – like in the way that, so picture Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant, say, last year, right? Where they're both kind of running downfield. Tate really slides more into that sort of Larry Fitzgerald over the middle role. And
I take that as Anquan Boldin in that offense. I mean, but I don't know. I'm not totally convinced.
I guess they both kind of run similar routes. And actually, this is a fine point too, which is that their overlap in skill set has led to fewer snaps for Tate. He's actually continuing to not be out on the field for all the offensive plays, which is not where you want to be for really any player. Just 44 snaps last week and 50 the week before that. But yeah, when he's out there, they're getting him the ball. So you got to think that a little bit on faith that that will continue to come up, since he's one of the only wide receivers really having a ton of success right now. But yeah, worth keeping an eye on the snap count for him for sure.
Arizona heads into Carolina to play the Panthers. They are slight underdogs, -3 heading in, which is kind of just your standard Vegas home team bump, and that's kind of it. It seems like David Johnson, last week, he had 33 carries and 13 targets, so 46 looks in the offense.
It's ridiculous.
I personally am penciling him in for that exact amount this week. What do you think about Johnson? Is he, you know, they're supposed to be underdogs, but it kind of, for him, I'm not sure it matters really, just the way they use him. Is he just like the highest floor guy of anybody playing this week?
I would suspect that he is. I mean, it's hard to get a much worse matchup with Seattle. And the fact that he could touch the ball 41 times in that game is a very, very welcoming sign. Now, the Cardinals also weren't very successful in that game on offense. So, you know, if you're concerned at all about them trying to change it up based on their lack of overall success, then, you know, maybe you figure the targets and carries come down. That said, they don't really... you know, they can come down by quite a bit, and he can still be a good play on 8,700. I mean, he's got that electric big play ability. You know, if they're going to especially use him by the goal line, which it seems like they're willing to do right now, then, yeah, he's just a tremendous value. It's really not a great matchup with Carolina either. Carolina's been very tough on the run this season, but I really don't mind playing him even in a tough matchup. And if he's bad, I'll almost certainly play him again the next time he has a good matchup. So that's kind of where I'm landing on Johnson right now.
Yeah, 7,700 on DraftKings, which strikes me as reasonable, just considering, especially if he's a PPR guy too. And so I'm totally willing to do it there. He right now is in top lineups for us. It's really close for him on FanDuel, only because there are a couple other running back values, which we haven't gotten to yet. But it's really close on him. He's a guy that will clearly, for me, play depending on what slate we're playing, but also there's just a chance that he's just in the top lineups as well, because, man, he's just like, you just can't, that, you know, that's, it's so funny, because when you look at a guy like him, or then you look at a guy like Forte, right, and I'm not comparing them in terms of skill, but I'm comparing them in terms of volume from the previous week, or and so you're like, okay, Forte got 40, close to 40 touches or whatever, and then Johnson, well, Forte, it's a total question mark, but Johnson, you're like, yeah, it's just kind of reasonable, like, he's just their best player. And so, I'm, again, kidding about penciling him in for 46 looks, but 30 is totally reasonable, and that's just so much. And there's very, very few other guys in the NFL that you can feel somewhat confident that they're going to get that many looks, and that for me is just kind of the story on him. What about the Carolina side of the ball? Cam, I mean, Cam was the guy we were high on. He gets hurt, high on earlier in the year. He kind of gets hurt. The running for him sort of has gone the way of the Russell Wilson running, where it's just really not there anymore. Do you think the concussion for Cam has affected him this year, and is he still considered anything close to like a safe or even elite fantasy quarterback?
I just don't think you can play him if he's not going to run the ball. You got bailed out against the Saints. But the Saints are a phenomenal matchup, and Arizona is something less than that. So, yeah, if he's not going to run the ball, I mean, you also got bailed out by his two rushing attempts. One was a touchdown.
Yeah.
So even when he was running the ball 7 times or 11 times a week, he was not always getting in the end zone. I don't love Cam this week. I just don't know why you bother on that price.
Is there anyone else on the Carolina side of the ball? It doesn't seem like they have a ton of guys that stand out to me, but maybe I'm missing something.
Nah, I don't think you're missing anything. It's just not a great fantasy situation. Like a guy you could consider for upside would might be Kelvin Benjamin, who, returned back-to-back weeks with 20% target share. A chance he puts it all together and has another enormous week like he did against San Francisco earlier this season. But you can probably do better even in that price range as well.
A game with huge fantasy implications this week, or DFS implications, mostly because of one guy, is the Chargers and Denver. CJ Anderson is out. I'm not sure he's out for the whole year, but he might be hit a tear in his meniscus. And the note here says he might be back ready for the playoffs. But that takes Devontae Booker and makes him just as a minimum price guy, slides him into the workhorse load. Is Booker the chalkiest play, and just, do you think he's the chalkiest play this week?
Yeah, I mean, and when we talk about earlier, like not being able to fit in guys, maybe even like David Johnson into your lineups, it's just because when you can get a guy who's going to get the lion's share of his team's carries in an excellent matchup with San Diego for essentially bargain basement prices, like that's, he's going to be in one of your slots in cash games. And if he's not, you're going to be one of those people who's staring at your lineup going, "So I didn't want to play Devontae Booker, huh?"
Well, okay. The only question for me is actually the cap. I mean, 3,700 on DraftKings it's a no-brainer. Yeah. He'll be like something like 80% start, I suspect. The question, I guess, more becomes for big tournaments for him. At some point, there are times you want to fade the chalk, and there's times you don't. And this strikes me as a time that you just don't want to, right? 3,700, is he going to be like a 60%? Let's say he's like a 60% start in the millionaire. That might actually even be low. I'd still do it because you're just never going to get this kind of expectation on 3,700. And really the only way it seems like you're not getting paid off on that is if he just gets hurt, right? So
the math just doesn't work. I mean, it's one thing to get separation, but normally you want to get separation when things are within a standard deviation of a reasonable performance, right? So with Devontae Booker, if his median expectation is basically what CJ Anderson was doing, you're just not going to find a lot of other guys at 3,700 who are even in the discussion with that kind of projected output. So, they can do it. I mean, particularly wide receivers, guys who can come out of nowhere and catch a lot of balls and run really far with them, like maybe Cameron Meredith a few weeks ago. But yeah, Devontae Booker should just be in your lineup. I think you're probably overthinking it if you take him out.
Yeah, he gets touches out of the backfield in the passing game as well. It's just really the perfect situation. I don't think we need to go crazy about it. And it's not a secret, too. Like, people will just be playing him everywhere. What about anyone else from this game? I mean, the San Diego has a tougher matchup. Their wide receiver core seems a little banged up right now, though I suspect everyone's going to play. Is there anyone interesting that we just outside of Booker in this game to you at all?
Yeah, I mean, the only guy I'm looking at for this game potentially is Antonio Gates. And I should say, too, actually, we skipped over Jack Doyle in the Indianapolis game.
Yeah.
Jack Doyle will probably be the chalk tight end again this week. We talked about him yesterday at 4,900. He's a great play. Luck, has that history of hooking up with tight ends and, passing the ball to tight ends, I should say. And yeah, I don't know anything about Luck's personal life. I don't want any angry tweets about that. But in terms of passing the ball to tight ends, he's going to like Doyle. I do think Gates is kind of a reasonable alternative option, though. Comes back out last week. His snaps have increased each of the last 3 weeks, and he's top 20% target share in each of those 3 weeks as well. So, if that number continues to rise, again, we're back in the big tournament discussion here, but he's very inexpensive and obviously has the upside of a guy who's one of the best tight ends of all time. So I don't know that it's a great cash game play just because the game script could really screw you here. He wasn't great against Denver in their last meeting on the 13th, but a guy to at least have on your radar for big tourneys.
Yeah, Gates is only 2,700 on DraftKings, which is a total joke of a price. And he actually, you know, right now we have it as starting starting Doyle and Gates to get savings for like 6,300 total. And you know, it never feels good to start two tight ends in DFS for sure, but those prices are just way too low. Especially on Gates, 2,700 is just a misprice if he's going to be back taking a majority of the snaps. That was kind of in doubt before with Hunter Henry, but if that's going to be the case for him, 2,700 is a joke of a price. The next game is Green Bay and the Falcons. This game got flexed from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Really some interesting fantasy stuff going on here. I'll start with Green Bay. Rodgers threw so many times last week in the Sunday night game. Do you think that is that just what the Packers are going to need to do with him now? We talked about a little bit with him in the last podcast, just as a cash game play, but just kind of go back just for 2 seconds about our thoughts on Rodgers and like the volume there.
Well, yeah, the Packers don't have anyone that can credibly play running back. So if you don't have anyone that can play running back, then you do what the Patriots have done in the past, which is use the short pass as the run. And while they did get a few carries out there, you know, Montgomery had 9, Cobb had 5. Those guys aren't running backs either. So it stands to reason that in any game that's moderately fast-paced, that they're going to rely on Rodgers. I think they're probably very encouraged to see that he is top 70% completion in the last 2 weeks as well, something that he was really struggling with both earlier this season and last season. And if they're going to trust Rodgers with those short passing attempts and, you know, occasional downfield shots, then I think he's going to be a great play on these prices. We called Oakland the worst passing defense in the NFL. Atlanta's right there with them. I think they're second or third. So, yeah, it's a great spot for Rodgers and a great spot for the two receivers who also sometimes play running back in Cobb and Montgomery.
Yeah, you love that. You love that they're getting the carries in there every once in a while. Like, just the fact that they're just featured even a little bit in the running game, even if they're just not very good running backs, just the fact that the team will just hand them the ball every once in a while, it's just not a thing you can get from any other wide receiver at all. So just being able to have that as part of the arsenal for a guy like Cobb. Cobb's also just been a huge target guy. Montgomery's been a nice target guy. They had three guys in double-digit targets last week. So this game has a lot of interesting implications. I'm fine playing both Montgomery and Cobb together on DraftKings, even with Rodgers for cash games. It seems like there's such a high floor on those things. Now that I've said that, Jordy Nelson will probably secure a ton of targets, but that's not a trend that's really happened for him at all. The other side is Devontae Freeman. Looks like he's going to be taking a majority of the carries this week out of Tevin Coleman. I don't think Tevin Coleman's been officially ruled out, but it really just doesn't seem like he's going to play. We talked about him last podcast. High floor, great cash game play. For us, it looks like the three cash game considerations for running back are Booker, Johnson, and Freeman. And I suspect the ownership, I mean, Booker will be the highest guy. And I think at that point, people essentially just try to figure out Johnson and Freeman, or, I mean, maybe a little Christian Michael. What about,
I think if you play Christian Michael out of that group, like if Tevin Coleman misses and your group is David Johnson, Christian Michael, Devontae Freeman, and Devontae Booker, I think you're nuts to play Christian Michael. I don't see how you can take a guy with whose opportunity is going the other way over a guy like two guys, for instance, like the Devontae brothers, whose opportunity is all coming into life, and the fact that they're still priced like guys who are splitting carries. Like, to me, if both of those guys are going to be the clear RB1s, then I'm going all Devontae's all the time on every site.
I like how you just call it, like, looping them together because of Devontae's. Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, that threw me off for a second.
But that's a family name.
Yeah. For both of them. The other guy, obviously, too, that we want to consider is Julio Jones. He saw 15 targets last week. His target share hasn't been, like, he's not consistent, like, in terms of Hilton or Evans, guys that are just seeing those double-digit targets almost on lock every single week. Like, he'll dip down into like that 6 and 7 range, which is a little concerning at the price, but it's really hard to argue with just the talent and the possible game script here for Jones. And do you consider him to be like, would you basically lock him into cash games at this point, even at his prices?
I wouldn't force him in, but I mean, the points per dollar makes sense. And just from a high level, like, everyone's going to play the guy. So if you're not playing him, you're doing so because you have some specific information to the contrary that he's going to be good. Since I do not have that, I'll just trust the numbers and say, sure, I'm going to get, you know, roughly 20 points of fantasy production on 9,000. That's a good deal. So I will proceed with that.
Yeah, but just to reiterate too, I personally would not play Michael. I could just see people talking themselves into him because of the matchup. So I just want to make sure that's clear that I'm not the guy that's going to be playing him. The Eagles go in and play Dallas this year. Dallas has really just relied so much on Ezekiel Elliott this season. But that being said, Philadelphia has been a very, very good defense to start the season. Where do you see this game falling into sort of fantasy expectations? I personally am not that excited.
Yeah, it's probably just going to wind up being a pass. I mean, the two rookie quarterbacks really haven't made any great receiving. Almost like great, like a baby.
Oh, baby world, baby. All right, yeah.
Baby world. We should talk about baby world on the podcast sometime, but today's not that day.
Now I have to say it because it sounds super creepy. My daughter my daughter uses this baby voice and it just drives me absolutely, absolutely freaking crazy. And we just say, oh, we're taking a trip to baby world, right? Because it just like nails on a chalkboard for me. So I didn't want people to be left.
You don't
want
to tell them about the other baby world thing you were telling me about?
Don't even make jokes like that. All right.
What's the joke?
It just sounds creepy.
It's a thing you made up that's really funny.
It sounds creepy. Okay.
We'll talk about it later. They haven't really turned anybody into a great receiving target. Ezekiel Elliott does just continue to turn out incredible volume week after week and good performances too. I mean, yeah, he falls into that David Johnson range where like I'd be happy to play him in most matchups. Like if I just wanted a safe guy to stick out there and hope for the best. But yeah, the Philly matchup does make it a little trickier. And given that we have two guys just who might frankly have as much opportunity as him for 2,000 or 3,000 less, like I probably just won't play the guy.
The one guy who could, you know, be interesting this week, it looks like Dez Bryant is going to play again this week. He's been practicing and that would add another weapon to the offensive side of things. You can't really trust him at all coming back from injury, and just they don't really pass enough, but worth noting, and possibly even for Elliott too, that Dez getting back into the mix, you know, that will shift a little bit of their offensive focus. Not anything.
Yes. I mean, like his last game when he played with Chicago, he had 3 receptions, right? So it's not like 7 the game before that, 1 the game before that. It's possible that he's going to mix things up a little bit, but I like if I were a season-long owner for Ezekiel Elliott, I certainly wouldn't be worried.
I wouldn't worry about 12 targets in that game against Washington too. So he clearly is a huge offensive upgrade for the Cowboys. It's just not – the Eagles' defense is good enough to the point where I really don't want to consider it. But, you know, on that late Sunday, Monday slate, you can talk yourself into playing some of those Cowboys guys, especially a guy like Elliott, and that's probably where I would focus my ownership on a guy like him. And then the Eagles are just kind of – I don't know, the Eagles, they're just a fantasy – quagmire, really. They don't. There's no one here that stands out really at any level. Actually, I don't even mind possibly even playing the Dallas defense just because the Eagles just aren't expected to put up a ton of points. The last game is the Monday night game with the Vikings and the Bears. Decent amount of injury stuff going into this one, especially with the wide receivers. Eddie Royal might not play. Cordarrelle Patterson might not play. Cameron Meredith is questionable. You know, is this a situation that let's go on the Vikings side of the ball? If they were really, really banged up in the wide receiver core, could you see Diggs returning to something of the targets he was seeing early in the season? That's kind of really dropped off for him in the last couple of games. But do you think if they were banged up that he would see just more of a target share against a weaker Chicago defense?
Yeah, I think there's a possibility. I mean, Diggs also worrying about his own injury struggles, right, with the groin stuff. So I don't know that you can jam him in there for cash games. I do think he's a reasonable high upside play. I mean, certainly he's put up some huge totals earlier in the season. The other guy I'm looking at for this game is actually Matt Asiata with Jerick McKinnon was seen in a walking boot yesterday. Now, it is, again, it's a Monday night game, so you can't really take as much from a Thursday practice as you normally could. But if McKinnon winds up, if his status remains in jeopardy, Asiata just 5,600 on FanDuel. He hasn't always been phenomenal when given the full workload, but he is the definitive goal line back and could be a guy, like you mentioned, on a 2-game slate that you just want to put in there just for, you know, safety and sanity, basically. So that's the guy I'm most interested in here.
Yeah, these teams are just pretty uninteresting. That's kind of the theme this week. The value just in general is mostly concentrated just to like 4 or 5 games total, it seems like. Sure. So, and that's fine. You'll see a lot of the chalk plays coming from those games, and a lot of these other games are pretty forgettable. Though with our watching TV luck when we go out to the bar, those other games would be the ones that would be massively featured all over every screen, and all the fun ones would be just buried behind the bar where you have to kind of duck to see.
Well, you just can't watch football on the bar up here because it's just you're going to get the Patriots game on 15 televisions and then like one sneaky red zone channel in the corner. So,
all right, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over, grab a free 3-day trial to the projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings.
NFL still going strong. NBA has really started the season very, very nicely, and that's all included under the same subscription package. So go check that out. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, we'll be starting our NBA podcast next week as well, so make sure to keep an eye out for that on iTunes. We'll be coming a couple, probably 2 to 3 days a week, talking NBA bigger slates. Hey, buddy, good luck this Sunday. I'll talk to you in 5 minutes when we hang up the phone and talk about other stuff.
All right, sounds good, bud.